So when couples argue about money, what do you do? How do you resolve that?
If you ain't online in line with money, you're getting divorced.
20 to 40% of divorces stem from financial problems. So 35% of people blame finances in their current relationship. And I would say these topics specifically have been a huge rub for Emily and I. The number one reason why people get divorced.
With a little health and a little wealth and a lot of love, that's the life that we live. Suits and Scrubs.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Suits and Scrubs, where we talk a little bit of health,
a little wealth,
with a lot of love. So I am one of your hosts, Emily MD, and joining me is my co-host, my handsome husband, Zachary SVP. He is a financial whiz, a guru of sorts. He has managed over $1 billion to date.
Making me blush.
And he has also reached his Coast Fire number, which if you don't know what that means, you'll need to watch one of our previous episodes. He is also, I like to bring a little fun fact about his history. So he actually was a music major.
Oh, geez.
In college.
Well, yes, I was.
Which is very unique considering the path that he took. But go ahead and take it away, honey.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. Well, if anyone's interested, I actually changed music majors into business. I was double major. I love music. It was awesome. I play the guitar. But I realized my passion was really business and entrepreneurship. So, I made a little switch. Well, thank you, Emily MD, who is double board certified in obesity internal medicine. She's exploring options for continuing education in functional and aesthetics. So we are on this journey. You're on this journey with us. I'm really excited about this opportunity where she believes the power of the patient should have access to quality information to make better decisions from a health standpoint. Fun fact about Emily is she is a modern day tin can woman. What does that mean?
What does that mean?
Yes.
I don't know what you're talking about. Go ahead.
Every time Emily bends over or cracks her knees, it goes, it's like a hinge. It's like.
I'm 35 going on 75.
I met her 6 years ago and she was like doing this anyway. So I swear, like, you just got bad knees.
It's the snap, crackle, and pop.
Yeah. What is that? Why do you think it makes that noise?
It's the crepitus. I just got a lot of probably like broken cartilage, a lot of.
Does it hurt?
No.
It sounds like it hurts.
It doesn't hurt.
It hurts my ears. It's like nails on a chalkboard.
But you
it's
can
like,
hear me. You can definitely hear me going up and down stairs.
Oh, for sure.
I can't sneak up on people. That's for sure.
And guys, we're talking about this. Y'all think I'm being dramatic. It literally is every single time. And it's like.
Anytime I do squats, it's a thing.
Yeah, it is a thing. All right. So we always start with our side story, guys. So we talk about IVF. So if you are listening consecutively, where we are in the process is we talked about last time, we're doing some genetic testing to see which eggs are viable. And so I think we're down to three.
We're down to four.
Four. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's better than I thought.
Better than you thought.
So guys, we probably will do another round. Here's why. Emily's going to correct my assumptions, but if we decide to transfer the embryos, mm-hmm. There is a percentage that they could fail. What's the percentage?
It depends on, so if you do the biopsy, the testing, then you will know if it's a viable embryo, which drastically improves your chances, whether that's to, I don't know, above 50% when you transfer.
Right.
Obviously, if you transfer an embryo that doesn't have the genetic makeup that you need, then you have a 0% chance of pregnancy.
Absolutely. And I just don't want to go through that. So, I told Em, the reason why we're doing this is from an insurance standpoint. We want to get our careers, our stabilization. People know we have aspirations to move and to do this full time, really. Like this is our passion. We want to help people provide quality information. And so we want to get these things in place first. And I always had a vision to have big dreams, as far as big family.
Mm-hmm. So you want a whole football team.
I do. I do. All boys. I don't know. I just want that. Wrestling around, you know, all this 300 for Halloween. Yeah.
Well, based on your track record, you're probably going to have all girls.
Well, there we go. All right. That's probably another episode of another day. But I will say this, though. So I don't want to lose sight of that dream. And yes, you can argue, you're going to be all dad. You're going to be, I don't care. You know, God's plan is God's plan. And we are listening. And this is the path that we chose. And mm-hmm. we want to make sure that we want to have opportunities for that. And so in the future, we probably will do another round.
Probably. And by another round, you mean another round of IVF.
Yep. Another round of IVF.
Another round of hormones.
Yes. So you guys will be very interested in hearing our progress, I'm sure, and all the fun stories. That means, you know, if you haven't caught the episode with Nut in the Cup, the male perspective, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and stickers, what does it all have to do together? Go listen to the episode. we probably spent about 10 minutes on that. Anyway, so yeah, so we probably are going to be interested in doing another round just to, and if our moms are watching, Betty's our center camera, Karen's my camera, Laurie is Emily's camera. We named our cameras after
our mamas.
Mm-hmm. And Phil and Russ, don't feel left out. Phil, you're right there. You are our notes. And Russ, you are our camera. Maybe because you're losing your sight. So, no, that's terrible. I'm kidding. I'm kidding, Russ, but you are our cameras. So if you guys are listening, shout out, Big B and O's family. Okay. Without further ado, I turn it back to Emily.
So I will take on my MC role. Today, we are going to move on and talk about the wealth series today. So what we're going to be talking about, it definitely reaches close to home for us. And I think a lot of our viewers, all three or four of you, might find it relevant as well. So we're going to be talking about Financially Ever After, building wealth before you say, I do.
So you find your forever after.
Yeah, you find your happily ever after.
Oh, yeah.
But what about your financially ever after? Mm.
Is that important?
It is. I mean, you'll tell us, obviously. We are going to start with our first segment, which is Under the Microscope.
Under the Microscope. In this segment, we take a deep dive into medical studies
and financial reports and break them down in layman's terms.
So go ahead and tell us a little bit more about this topic that we're discussing today.
Yeah. So 35% of people blame finances in their current relationship. Now, I have a lot of conversations with my friends and my family. That number is so true. And finances could mean maybe a partner is out of work. Maybe a partner doesn't have the same financial objectives as you. And I would say these topics specifically have been a huge rub for Emily and I. And, you know, I would say this. There's a reason why you're attracted to someone and the reason why you're drawn to someone. And after the honeymoon phase kind of fades, Emily grounds me. If it was up to me, I would live probably in a tiny home paying less than $600, $700 a month. And saving every dollar we have, investing, paying student loans. She's working ungodly hours, even though she's unhappy. I'm working ungodly hours, unless you know that I'm unhappy. And so M does bring a lot of ground to me. So our financial decisions is very important to us. But I do feel there's more to life than just finances. But for this episode, the number one reason why people get divorced, well, there's top two. One is sex and money. So if you ain't getting it on, you're getting divorced. If you ain't online in line with money, you're getting divorced. So these two topics are really, really important for you to ensure that you stay on top of. And so a part of that is, so money is one of the widely causes of divorce. And of that, 20 to 40% of divorces stem from financial problems. So 4 out of 10 get married. I know I just said that. Alarming number of Gen Xers, 41% are getting divorced because of money issues. 29% of baby boomers are getting divorced because of money issues. So there's a huge disparity between different age groups in divorce. Mm-hmm. And so the topic of this episode is financially ever after, what to do before I say I do, build wealth. And I think it's important to understand and put things in place because these things can be avoided. I strongly believe that these things can be avoided if you have an open, honest conversation. When people talk about finances, I think people are not as transparent, even with themselves. And I'll get into that in just a second in our next segment.
And I think that's, it's a real problem. I think a lot of us know that finances can really cause a lot of conflict. So...
and our relationship has caused a lot of conflict.
It has. It has. So we'll move on to the next segment, which I think is very relevant as well, to kind of give us a build up on some of the knowledge that you're going to be spitting today. But our next segment is Mind and Money Matters.
Mind and Money Matters.
In this segment, we'll be exploring psychological aspects
of financial and health choices.
So tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So it's good before we jump into this episode of Financially Ever After, how the psychology of money works. So there is a major play in gender differences. So genders have a different perception of money. A lot of men...
and that's a generalization, but yeah.
It is a generalization, but 9 times out of 10, based upon the research, and by the way, guys, y'all fact check me. I don't want to put everyone into a blanket statement. There are some absolutely very financial, successful women and men, and they have different psychologies around this. But I'll be honest, our target audience, the average male, is the shepherd of their household when it comes to finances and money. The average female is the shepherd of health in their family. They decide, they make the health decisions. And to be inclusive, same-sex marriages, as well as other, you know, LGBTQ plus whatever, we are very inclusive here because we believe quality information of health and wealth should be out there for everyone. We do. And so... some gender differences is most men will participate in very high risk trading involving the stock market, equities, things of that nature. Most women, though, however, it's just fascinating, are very specific on budgeting and saving. I will say this, you cannot save yourself to wealth. You could probably 50, 60, 100 years ago. You can save yourself to wealth. Why do you think you can't save yourself to wealth anymore?
I mean, there are a lot of differences now. I mean, there's high interest rates, the way that the economy
is getting warm,
the inflation.
Bam! I was looking for one word. It's inflation. It's inflation. The value of the dollar has just eroded over time, where it was backed by gold. Now, inflation has absolutely drove... the value of the dollar. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it took two incomes to live middle class, and this new evolution of the silent depression, they're calling it, it's going to require to think differently and to think more smart. So I think you guys listen to us, follow us, because we want to offer you strategies and ways that you can get ahead and you can think differently from most people so you can save to your financial independence. And so we talk about the gender. So the impact of money on relationship quality. So when couples argue about money, what do you do? How do you resolve that? That's a very difficult conversation. I mean, yes, you can go to a therapist, but at the end of the day, the therapist is there, I think, more for emotional needs. For financial disagreements, I think you could actually avoid those. Here's how. Not avoid them, but be more proactive. So I'm a big believer of sitting down with your spouse, your significant other, your partner, and walking through all your financial goals. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, like I don't know the stats on this, and I should, but a lot of people don't have budgets. They don't understand their net worth. We do our net worth every single year. Every single year, in right in January, right before taxes are due, we do our net worth, so we know where we're headed.
Yeah, and I think that's something to consider with when you talk about the psychology of finances or money. You have two people in a relationship who come theoretically from completely different backgrounds, which was the case for us. Everybody has a different idea of how to spend, how to save. Both people have a different knowledge base when it comes to finances. And so I think transparency, like you were saying, is key. You've got to be open to talk about it. You have to be able to sit down and be very open about some of those decisions.
Yeah. And so what I'm saying about this one in particular, when financial decisions, I think that couples should meet at their own tempo, whether it's weekly or monthly, whatever. Me and Emily do this quite a bit, actually. Mm-hmm. I'm a spreadsheet guy. Not everyone is. And so I'll drop our expenses and I'll drop down and I'll tag them. I said, this is what we're spending on DoorDash. This is what we're spending on Amazon. This is what we're spending. And newsflash, guys, we spent $1,600 in Amazon last month. We spent $1,600 in
DoorDash. You've really got to keep a pulse check on.
You do.
You have to be aware of what you're spending.
You do. And right now, as many people are listening and following, you know, Emily is pursuing a higher power. I see it, and which requires her to study and get more certifications to pursue her interests. This is one of the things that we're doing right in our spare time, and it's not very lucrative right now. And Emily is pursuing like locum positions and things like that, but we're on one income right now. And it is a struggle, but I believe in her. I believe in our vision. I believe in what she's trying to do. And I believe in her happiness.
So you got to be aligned on that.
You do.
You really have to both believe that that's the course that you're taking.
It is. And let me tell you this, guys. We've been working. We get up in the morning, we work our normal jobs, and we work until 8, 9, 10 o'clock. It's 9 o'clock now, but this is date night for us. This is very fun for us. I will say the devil like loves to enter your thoughts, the war of the mind, and he loves to tell me that she's not good enough, and meaning that she's just going to drain you financially, she's not doing this, she's not doing that.
Trying to take advantage.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. And it's so hard to quiet that. And if her and I are so aligned in our mission and what we're trying to do, it's a very sexy thing.
And a lot of that, too, comes from past trauma, past experiences.
That's true.
It's another reason why you've got to be very transparent and open about how you feel about finances.
I agree.
And spending money and saving money. And
yeah. And I think that the six things that we're going to talk about, you know, this is the foundation of this. You know, we got to make sure that we hit on these topics before we get into the meat of the episode. So we talk about gender differences. We talk about the impact of money on relationship quality. So financial decision making. So who makes these decisions in your relationship? I'm a strong believer that people, couples, individuals should play to their strengths. Mm-hmm. And I work for a bank. I work in every aspect of the financial services industry. I know finances like the back of my hand, personal finance, things of that nature. And I think that I'm a big fan of roles and responsibilities in relationship. I think that you should define what makes sense for you. I'm not saying traditional roles, so don't send me hate mail, but there's some things that I'm really, really good at. And financial management is one of those things. Emily has an acute attention to detail. She's very, very good at that. Obviously, she is the shepherd of our health. She makes sure that the quality of meals that are going into our bodies is very, very healthy. You know, I rely on her on that. She relies on me from a financial standpoint. And Some couples may have joint accounts and some may have separate. That individual decision is yours to make and yours to make alone. For example, my parents have separate accounts. I think it's funny because they'll sit there and talk. I put this on my credit card and I did this. And if you guys are listening, God love you. But it's hilarious to me because y'all have been married for so damn long that at the end of the day, it is all your money.
But it I mean, it's funny, but it works for some people.
You know what? It does work for them.
It just proves, it shows that everybody has a different way. And there's not one single way that's the best way. But I think you speak to, like, these are the things that you should set up.
Right.
And it's a kind of a universal way to, for all of these different ways to manage finances.
Yeah.
So yeah. This is applicable to a lot of different people.
Yeah. But now, you know, and I would say this, like, and I'm not throwing shade. I'm not throwing grenades here. You know, obviously you guys know I've been married before. We talked about that a little bit. And in that relationship, our finances were separate. Emily, however, our financials are together. And that is just demonstrating so much trust. I trust my wife. Like, I just can't explain the level of trust that I feel for her. Like, genuinely. She is such a good person. And I feel like she would never take advantage of me financially. I've never, ever felt more safe in my entire life than with her. And I really, really mean that. So, you know, I feel like I'm getting a little emotional right now. No, I'm serious. Like, I think that, and a lot of that, I give credit to her parents and her family and her upbringing. And I really do trust her. I think that she's just an incredible person. She, first of all, if you're not watching on YouTube, look at this. This is gorgeous. She's wearing the I Dream of Jeannie. What is it? A ponytail. You know, she's absolutely gorgeous. She's stunning. And she's just, you know, she's my ride or die. You know, I fall in love with her more and more every single day. And I think just watching her just grow outside of her comfort zone and just being surprised. If your spouse can surprise you guys, like, that to me is so powerful. So I know that's off topic a little bit, but I really do want to give you a shout on that.
Well, thank you, sweetie.
So there is a socio-psychological aspect of money. This hits home for me. I don't know about you guys, but this hits home for me. And let me tell you why. What does this mean? This means your financial well-being, your person, your DNA is driven by your financial success and your self-esteem and confidence. So some couples have different dynamics within their relationship. And we talked about this in my first few episodes. You know, I come from very humble beginnings. I watched my family struggle. You know, we were homeless sometimes. You know, my mom did not have a place to go. And my aunt Janice, who is actually her best friend, who's no longer with us, we stayed with her. And I was just so thankful to have that. And you know, it was just hard. And you don't realize how hard that was until you look back. Because as a kid, you just look at the day-to-day and it was an adventure. You didn't know what you didn't have until you have it. And my parents really are the American dream. They worked really hard. My mom went back to school. My dad and my stepmom, you know, they married and crushed the sales game. Mm-hmm. I'm just really, really proud of them. And so the socio-physiological aspects of money, getting back to that, is I feel like I will never, ever have enough money in the bank. And it's not about money, I know. It's the resources. Is having the emergency fund, making sure that I have the confidence and self-esteem to make decisions unapologetically, like this podcast, you know, investing in our education, your education, and yeah, other things. It gives me confidence.
Well, I think it also speaks to knowing your spouse's or your partner's background, because obviously your background really impacted the way that you look at money or the way that you look at security.
It'll never be enough.
It's this mentality, the fight or flight mentality, where you didn't have a lot of the needs whenever you were younger. And so I think that's a lot of what drives you today, is that you want to be able to support your family. You don't want to be back in that position that you were, where you can't get those basic needs.
Right.
And you might have a spouse. I was very blessed growing up. I had two parents that came from nothing that taught me the value of a dollar, but I also wanted for nothing. And it definitely gives you a different perspective. And so I'm definitely more of a enjoy the journey, and I might not necessarily appreciate as much as you do, because you know what it felt like to be without. And so I think you talk about the psychology of money and finances. Mm-hmm. It's important to know your partner's background and to know where they're coming from and why drives their financial decisions.
That's
why they are so passionate about certain things, or why they have trust issues, or why they want to have separate accounts or separate finances. So I think that's important too.
Yeah. You got to give your partner grace. And I think a lot of the conflicts that we have in our relationship as it relates to money, and this is probably real to couples, and I'm going to say something that's probably going to set you off, but just bear with me. I think that you never understood what it felt like to go without. Mm-hmm. And so when I feel like you take your time with your decisions, especially when it relates to our financial well-being, it really tears me up inside. It really does. And so I'll give you some examples, and I think this is real. I think we should talk about it, as long as you don't storm off like last time. I think we're in a good place. But, you know, when we decided that you were going to work part-time because of your horrible situation, the way that your office treated you, and then it got worse, and they didn't pay you in October, you know, when she was a primary care physician, they didn't pay her because they overpaid her a few months, which that's another story for another day, which we don't believe that's what happened, but that's okay. We're going to move on. Mm-hmm. And no communication, no nothing. Emily was working part-time, but really working 40 to 50 hours a week, making so much less than what she was worth. And it was a struggle. She still had, you know, depression and all. It was terrible, guys. It was terrible. I never want to see someone you love go through something like that. It's hard because you're chained to your student loans and all that. And as you work part-time, and if that was me, my situation would be I would have found another job immediately as soon as the time clock exited. Mm-hmm. And in my situation, that's where like my rub is, because, you know, 4 weeks later, yes, I know you're and Emily is working, y'all. Emily's working from early morning to late at night. We have pivoted our journey, and she is working like that. She's working really hard, and God's going to provide. We believe it. And that has been a challenge for me to exercise patience in that situation when I would have done things differently.
And it's all about perception too, I think.
It is perception.
I mean, obviously, like many other couples, we argue about finances, even though we are blessed to not be in a situation where we can't put food on the table or we can't pay our bills right now. So it hits close to home, and the way that we differ, I guess, whenever we think about things, and it comes kind of back to those gender roles, is that a lot of times women are by default expected to take care of the household and expected to cook the meals and to clean the house and to take care of the babies, whether that's fur babies or real babies. But, you know, I definitely take on those roles as a part of our household.
You do.
And it's just a hard situation to be in, especially when you're used to being such a high earner.
Yeah.
And
I can imagine, like, I didn't even think about that. So the psychology around money for this, mind and money matters for you, is you went from a very strong salary to cut it in half, less than half.
Mm-hmm. But working more.
Working,
making,
yeah.
Making less than half, but working more than half.
Yeah. And then going to zero. So I you know, I never thought about that. I never thought about what does that do to you from a psychological standpoint, especially since you spent all this time training for something. And then when you got out, it wasn't what you expected. And so I'm looking in the camera, I'm looking at Karen, and I'm pretty much saying that we're going to find something and we're going to do it better than insurance-based and anything else that is defined for us. We're going to make our own rules.
And I know we're kind of going off topic. Or
it's
going
money, money matters.
I know, we're but not. Going on a tangent, but that's the other part about a relationship is that sometimes one person will take over the stress of the finances while the other maybe takes over other responsibilities that maybe they weren't doing before to pivot and get to a position where you're living in harmony again, where you're both
I agree with that.
Emotionally in a good place, you're both physically in a good place, and it's all about partnership and it the give and take. There's you might have one person who's giving more at one point in your relationship than the other, but it's important that there's that balance. Like you can't obviously have that one-sided. One person's a giver the entire time. The other person's a taker. Obviously, that's not going to be something that's sustainable. But I think it's good to.
There should be a timeline and boundaries
and discussion.
It is a discussion.
Being open about that and knowing that there is a plan or there is a plan with us,
and that's what I'm not elaborating on. I'm talking about like what our challenges are. There is a plan, right? There's a plan. Mm-hmm. That we're focused on, that you agreed to do. This is one of them.
Which you play to your skill sets. You play to your strengths.
Yeah, and I would say this: Emily has more job security than I do, and so one day when AI replaces all of our jobs, I am an AI enthusiast. Healthcare, what Emily does, I might be dependent on her. So we have a lot of faith. And what the future looks like for us. Mm-hmm. And
trying to enjoy the journey.
That's one thing that I talked to my mom about on Friday was making sure you enjoy the journey. So anyway, so we talked about some of these other aspects, and then there's some cultural differences too when it comes to Mind and Money Matters. So the American dream for us, we do worship material things. We have a lot of luxuries here. It was a funny conversation I was having with my intern who's from Colombia, and his grandmother was visiting him over here. And his mom was like, Alexa, do this, this, this. And Alexa was responding and giving all the answers, all the questions or ordering whatever. And the grandmother was like, oh my God, but that's not common. But the thing is, I don't think people are any happier in America than they are in other countries.
It's probably the opposite. People are probably happier in other countries.
Right. And Japan's the same way. The highest death rate is in Japan, and they call it the dead pigeon, where they work so hard, they just drop dead, which sounds terrible, but that's really the thing. So we talked about Mind and Money Matters, but let's get some stats. I'm a big stats person. So 3 of 5 Americans have put off marriage because of debt. 54% believe having a partner with insurmountable debt was a major reason for divorce. And when Emily and I were talking about this episode, she didn't see this material. Her eyes went like this. So it is important for us to talk about. And this is the interesting topic, too. So we talk about finances and sex being the number one reasons why people are getting divorced. But there's also something called financial infidelity. What do you think that is?
So the secrecy of, I guess, spending money without telling your spouse, trying to hide expenses from your significant other.
Now here's the stats. 31% of people are spending money not telling their spouse. 28% are hiding debt from their spouse. And what's worse is 22% are dishonest about their income. I don't know about you guys, But newsflash, no wonder finances are the number one reason why couples are getting divorced in America. It all comes to become transparency, you know?
Trust.
Trust and transparency. Yeah. It is. I know it's hard out there. And again, we try not to be doomsday. There's enough of that on the TV. We could talk about how the rising cost of food, gas, inflation, no one can afford a house, all of that. But at the end of the day, let's put that aside. You got to be transparent with your partner. You got to sit there and sit down and say, hey, here's what's going on.
Honest, truthful, honesty is key.
Yeah. And if you don't want to do it weekly, do it monthly and say, this is where we are financially, guys. So that concludes what I have for Mind and Money Monitors.
I think it's in our situation, it's hard because I'm a very independent person and was used to making my own money. And especially making a doctor's salary. And then you go from that to not working full time or working part time, and then learning what your new role is.
Yeah.
And feeling like you don't want to be controlled. You don't want to be controlled by, you know, the other partner because they make more money than you do. But you also want to respect the fact that they're providing for you and they're working hard to support your family. So I think there's that power dynamic.
There's that power dynamic. And I think appreciation is everything. I would say in our relationship, probably the top two or three things, probably number one thing is communication for us. Mm-hmm. Three or four or whatever, is probably appreciation. Like, I don't feel appreciated a lot of the times, and I'm sure you don't either. So there's a lot of going on here, you know? And when you work a full-time job, you have a real estate company, you have two companies you're starting this year, you know, you're paying all the bills, you're responsible for things. So we talked about this last time. I don't want her storm off set. You know, I don't. And, you know, but it's important. But just because I'm shouldering that now doesn't mean that she doesn't drive and add value to our relationship.
Or shoulder other things.
Right. And there's things that she's driving now that I can't replicate. You know, the fact that she's double board certified, just from a professional standpoint. Other aspects is she's a shepherd of the health of our relationship. She is trusting in me and aspirations and dreams that look so much different than what she thought that she could ever obtain. And that to me, even though she doesn't say it, because Emily's not a verbal person, the fact that she's allowing me to lead that, it means everything.
It's a whole another episode about knowing your love languages.
Yeah, it is.
How you express those. But
it's I think it's a beautiful thing that you allow me to lead us in a place that I didn't even think that we would be. This podcast, never thought a million years I would do something like this. It's just called to us. So, yeah.
Well, we hope we can give people some valuable guidance just based on what we've gone through.
Yeah.
So I know that the bread and butter of this episode, we really want to talk about what you can do, what the main decisions or the things that can really set you up before you say I do. But if you've already said I do and you're having marital problems because of financial difficulties, these can probably help as well. But specifically, there are six things that you are going to tell us about. If you stay to the end, apparently there is going to be a little bonus or extra. I don't know if that bonus is going to be for me or for our viewers, but I guess we will see.
I don't know. You're looking kind of hot tonight with a little Lodgy Magini. I've never seen you looking like this, girl. I got looking cute.
So tell us about, why don't we go into these six things to do before you say I do.
Okay, cool. So the first thing I think everyone should do, and listen, this is not just for newlyweds. This is not just for engagement couples. I think everyone should do this. And if you've been married for 5 years, 10 years, and y'all have not done this, you guys are behind the eight ball. The definition of no plan is failure. You got to have a plan. So the first thing I recommend for folks to do is to bring their balance sheet. Now, you may hear balance sheet as relates to businesses. Yes, it does apply in the business world, but do you also have a balance sheet within your own personal, right? So I'm not saying you're walking around with a big old balance sheet on your forehead, but everyone has their own personal balance sheet. Mm-hmm. Do you know what a balance sheet is?
I mean, I would imagine that it's your debts and your savings.
Whatever. Okay. You're getting warm. So it pretty much a balance sheet is your assets and liabilities.
Okay.
And your total net worth. So you want to put all your assets on a specific spreadsheet. Mm-hmm. And this is one thing I'll ask about people. And this is why I did Mind and Money Matters, the psychology. If you are married to someone or thinking about getting engaged, but you don't want to disclose your financial assets to them. And I, by the way, this is a true thing. If you're trying
to dig into.
Yeah. If you want to try to hide those things, you might want to ask yourself why.
Yeah.
So, you know, and what I'm offering, if you go to SusanScrubsPodcast.com, there are some free resources that we're offering. And in the title of these resources, it's the Newlywed and Engagement Kit. But again, it's not just for newlyweds and engagement, but if you are in that category, this is for you. And so you enter your assets, liabilities, all your debts, everything you can think of, all in one place, and it spits out what your net worth is. And your net worth is defined by what are you bringing to the table when you're married. And it's really important for y'all both to sit down and to have that conversation so you know exactly what will happen when you merge. Mm-hmm. And the balance sheet is so important in addition to that, because there's another topic that I will talk about, but not right about now. So for the second one is understanding your debts. So yes, you have your balance sheet. I think it's very important to understand your debts.
Mm-hmm.
And not only your debts, but what are you willing to take on as debt? For us, that was a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
My beautiful, sweet wife, she does not ask for a lot. She really doesn't. She doesn't want label clothes or nice purses, materialistic things. However, she wanted a wedding.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of me talking about this, do you want to talk about what that was?
Sometimes a big button issue for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it was my first marriage and hopefully my only marriage.
Jeez, is that where this episode is going?
And I guess I wanted the experience. I think a lot of women want that one day or that one weekend where they can feel like, I don't want to be cliche and say feel like it's a fairy tale or feel like a princess, but I wanted to have that moment that memory, I guess. I wanted that memory of our wedding day. I wanted to be able to look back on it, and I wanted the pictures, and I wanted our family and our friends to be there, and I wanted everything to be perfect. And I think looking back, it really did not matter as much as I thought it would.
And guys, this is me not telling her. This is really a true story. This is really how she feels. And before we get into that, I will say this. This has been a big complex between us. A lot of couples don't make it down the aisle because they fight about things like this. Mm-hmm. And we start seeing the price tag with weddings. I do believe you can do a wedding very affordably, and it can be beautiful. In fact, I went to one not that long ago. It was very affordable. It was 1/4 hours.
And we can go down and nitpick, but I mean, we were also in the midst of COVID where prices were much higher.
That's true. But what I'm saying is, like, you could still have done it affordably, and, you know, obviously you didn't like my ideas. You know, I was, what I wanted was just to rent a big old house and all of our friends and family. I'm talking about 32 bedrooms mm-hmm. and just get married and just be done with it. And it was would be like 1/10 of what we spent, but that's not what she wanted. And it was a big point of contention. And this is why, because you look at our balance sheet, you know, you have someone that has just finished residency, has $250,000 in loans, no retirement, high earning potential, but hasn't started her job yet. And then me, in my situation, it just things didn't add up. And I'm okay spending that much money on a honeymoon. And so this was a big contention. Mm-hmm. So how we compromised on this was I told her, it was a lot of back and forth. I talked to a lot of good friends of mine. You know, I talked to this, I have this old colleague of mine at work, and she's Jewish, and I say that on purpose, and she is extremely good with money. And she said, Zach, if you don't cuss, she said, F it. She wants a princess wedding? You better give her a princess wedding. Because every woman's entitled to feel like a princess on their wedding day. And it's not the first time I've heard it. It was the first time it clicked for me. And mind and money matters, the psychology of money. Mm-hmm. It, to me, it was more important because, like I said, guys, the reason why I said earlier, Emily doesn't ask for a lot, but this was an important part of our relationship where I created a compromise. I said, if you buy a house, which is what we're in right now, and we went through this whole another episode. We'll talk about real estate and probably in a future episode. But we went through this whole 1 year process of developing, extending, getting a loan, the construction loans, 2.5%, hard to find. No one touched the real estate. 60 days to sat on the market, which is insane in Charlotte. We're like a mile away from uptown. You can see the city view from our porch. $1 million properties that are building left and right on the street. Mm-hmm. Very good decision. Very stressful, but she trusted me on that, and I trusted her on what she wanted for her vision. So you can't put a price on experience, and that's what I think that we compromised on. So I know I brought that up, and I was kind of surprised you on that. I know it's not a comfortable topic for you, but this is real, man. This is our real life. This is the real life situation in our relationship. I want to talk about these things because it's real, and we're past it. And we grow better from it. But I will ask you this. Was it worth
it? I think there are certain things that were worth it. The pictures, okay. The
video was
the
awesome.
Video.
In fact, we might watch it tonight.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. But if you think about...
And guys, I will say this. If you are on the fence about having a wedding video, that is one thing... I've been married twice, so I have some experience in this. That is one thing. Do not scrimp on. Do the wedding video.
Yeah.
That is worth more than anything else.
Anytime that you get mad at each other, when your husband brings up how much money you spent on the wedding during a podcast, and you want to strangle him, you can always watch that wedding video and see how in love you were with each other.
That's true. But was it worth it?
There were certain parts that were, and I think the way that I thought about it, I was working a full-time job as a primary care doctor. You were working a full-time job. Yeah. And my perception of it was this is a venue and they're going to plan everything for me and I'm not going to have to do anything. And so it's going to be worth the money.
Right.
But whenever we look back,
it wasn't that way.
There was a lot of stuff that we had to take on. And so
that was annoying.
Hindsight's 20/20. But that was why I wanted to spend so much money up front, honestly, was because I thought it was going to be something where it would be, you know, you're making all these decisions up front. And then when the day comes, it's going to be stress-free and you're going to be able to enjoy it. But I feel like a lot of people will realize that your wedding day, the ceremony day is stressful and...
It is stressful.
And you're always going to be dealing with people complaining, family members, friends complaining, what you're going to do, especially during the COVID pandemic when you have half of your family who's one political affiliation and the other half that's other.
True. That was a lot
and
of stress.
And it's a lot of stress.
And so
hindsight 2020, if we could have gone off and just had our own, you know, private ceremony, it probably would have been better.
Yeah.
But
We're not recommending that.
But we digress.
Yeah. But it's important because like debt is like that's number two that I'm talking about. So one is balance sheet. Two is debt. And the way that you decide in debt, you know, the episode is called Financially Ever After. Mm-hmm. You have to be on the same page about debt, including and
that is a big thing.
And guys, we did not have debt when we got married.
Yeah, we didn't go into debt for our wedding.
We the did biggest, not, the but biggest it was debt, hard.
The biggest debt was were my student loans. That
well,
was
that ring.
The debt that I, well.
Well, that wasn't debt either. I paid in full for that.
So.
You want to show the audience? Come on, show them. You don't ever show them.
So let's show talk them. About.
We're not getting on. No. I will drive us to the next. Show them.
So.
All right. So we talk about debt. So yes. The next thing is couple budget. Mm-hmm. It's very important to understand where your dollars are going. I'm a big believer in zero-based budget, which means you understand exactly every single dollar it's going to. And at the end of the month, you're like, oh my gosh, I have $200. No. You need to know every single dollar you're spending, and you need to have a very specific budget. And I have templates and spreadsheets. And if you go to SusanScrubsPodcast.com, I will give you some resources. And these are spreadsheets, guys, I've been using for 10, 15 years. Mm-hmm. I might as well just give them away. I'm giving them away for free. All you have to trade in is your email. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to harass you with that much email because right now we're still trying to figure this stuff out. However, making sure that you have a budget and you guys agree to. What is your entertainment budget? A lot of people argue how they want to just spend their discretionary income. You know, some people want to travel. Some people want to go out to eat. Some people want to order DoorDash.
And you have to compromise.
You do.
You have to compromise and come to an understanding of what that budget is going to look
like.
That's
right. That's right. And so at my desk now, I have all of our businesses. I have all our expenses. And I have all of our debts and assets and income. Mm-hmm. And how much money we're bringing in, how much money we're losing each month. And it's a very real thing. So that's a very important part, which is number three. So number four, which talks about balance sheet, debts, and budget, to prenup or not to prenup? That is the question.
I think that's a huge point of contention for a lot. Obviously, it's very unsexy before you get married. Everybody feels differently about it.
Everybody does.
To me, it wasn't a big deal, but I'm sure it is to some people, a lot of people. The way that I look at it is I believe marriage is forever, and I hate the thought of having to do financial or legalities before saying, like, what happens if we don't work out? And to me, I look at the glass half full and I'm like, well, we're going to work out. So I'm not going to have to worry about this in the first place. But at the other flip of the coin is if you're fair, if you go into a marriage and you appreciate that other person has brought something to the table, then you really shouldn't have a lot of resistance to allowing them to keep those assets after the divorce. But that's just my, I know there's some gray area and that's different for a lot of people, but
I'll let her finish.
It's kind of how I thought about things.
Guys, get a flipping prenup. I'm not joking. Get a prenup. I don't care if you're worth 10,000. I don't care if you're worth 100 million. Get a prenup. Sit down with your spouse, and if any of you guys are uncomfortable disclosing your information to each other, that is another podcast for another day, because there's some big trust issues that you're already going into that you're already not solving for. I'm looking right into camera on this because this is so important. You need to understand where you guys sit from a financial perspective. I also believe in a postnup. A postnup does exist. In our situation, Emily's totally cool. And as we do businesses together and we decide that this is what we're going to do, and you know, I'm probably going to fund them all and put the money up. I'm just going to be honest. I am. A postnup means you can reset the rules of how you want to distribute your financial goals.
And that can change with children. And
it could change with children and time. Like, for example, let's say that we decide to move and, you know, my job is eliminated, goes overseas, whatever. And then you're the breadwinner.
And all sometimes, too, you have to think about other things like people who have addictions, like gambling addictions. And when you want to protect that for your family, too, it's we talked about it's very unsexy, but sometimes you have to protect your future and your family.
Have the conversation, guys. I'm telling you.
Be open about it.
Be open about it is very unsexy. You know, when things are very, very good, it's beautiful, right? But when things go bad, you don't know how someone's going to be. And this hits so close to home for me from my own personal experience, but also a lot of people who are going through situations like this right now, which I won't say who, and other situations. And so I think every single couple should have a prenup. You should understand and sit down and make sure what you bring into the marriage, I think, is off limits. What you build together as a couple, with some limitations, I do think it's fair for you to divide that. Because I don't, like, let's say that I'm a stay-at-home dad. And by the way, I do know people at the bank who their husbands are stay-at-home dads. And they raise their children, they take care of the household, they do the finances, they do all of that. So I'm just looking at that example. And let's say they get divorced and the wife is working and doing and have a high-paying job. I think the husband should be entitled to half because they enable them to be successful. And I do think there's other situations that you have to analyze and you have to trust your partner. It's like Emily, I just said this earlier, I trust her inherently. I think that she's one of the most trustworthy people out there. And so get a prenup, and if you miss the prenup, get a postnup. Real things. Do it. So the fifth thing is financial goals and aspirations. Make sure that you guys are aligned to your financial goals. For us, we like to pay for time. So the outside looking in, people might look at us and say, okay, you know, we do have someone that cleans her house. It used to be once a week. Now we just go back down to two times a week. We have somebody once every 2 weeks. That's right. And then we also have someone who does house management for us, property management, you know, for one of my businesses, but also comes over and does the laundry once a week. You know, it just helps out. We are a big believer in buying time, and that's what motivates us. And so I do think making sure you're on track for something like that. But also, too, like if you are interested in having a beach home or a mountain home, making sure you're aligned to that goal and what that goal looks like. It just doesn't just happen. You have to plan for something like that. What are you comfortable with your children, you know, your future children? If you want to have children, some couples don't want to have children, which is totally fine. How do you want to save for that? Do you want to do 529s? Do you want to do college savings accounts? Like what's important to you? So those are the kind of things that you have to put in perspective as relates to you as a couple to make sure you get on the same page with before you have your financial ever after and your mm-hmm. forever after. And then the sixth thing is your investment strategy. Now, this might glaze your eyes over, but hear me out. You want to sit down and understand the appetite of risk that you have. And be informed and empowered to ask the right questions. I do believe in roles and relationships and that play to your strengths. I didn't say traditional roles. I'm not saying woman cleans, man provides. I'm not saying that. I'm saying what is a natural alignment to your specific strengths. Mm-hmm. And in your investment strategy, you have to understand your risk tolerance. You shouldn't be, if you're in a relationship with somebody and they're driving the financial decisions, but yet they're having extremely high risk and you're not comfortable with that. You know, I'm going to buy 15 houses this year. Oh, really? Wow. You know, or whatever. You have to make sure that you're comfortable with those level of the risk appetite that the other mm-hmm. person has.
And we definitely ran into that. I am the quintessential cautious spender and saver. And so you have to be transparent and comfortable with the decisions and kind of know what that entails. But there is an inherent level of trust that you have to have. And so that's kind of something that that travels through all of these six recommendations is that there has to be a level of trust, and there has to be communication and transparency, right? Because that's the basis. You got to build on a foundation.
Right. The number one saying is those two things, communication, transparency as it relates to finances. Yeah. I don't know what happens, but people's butt pucker when you talk about finances. They just do. And people are not transparent with their finances, whether it's how much they make, their debt, their assets, their liabilities. And so...
And you have to speak up about it. Real. You can't just...
Talk about it.
You can't let someone steamroll over you. You have to talk about what your insecurities are or what your concerns are.
Yeah. And what inspired this podcast, guys, is, you know, I'm very interested in the health segment, and we talked about that last time, but also the wealth segment. Educating my wife, we have these conversations. We have a recorded date night. This is what it is for us. And having these conversations to expose to other people so that way they can have conversations like this in their household.
Yeah. You and know, I've been, like, I grew up, or just the way that I've lived as a female physician, I feel like I've been very independent and have been resistant to someone maybe not necessarily taking control of our finances, but wanting to be included in those decisions. I think you have included me in those decisions, but you also have to realize I don't have that knowledge base. I don't know how to invest. I don't know the best financial decisions when it comes to financial security and early retirement and investment. And so you really have to trust your partner, but you have to feel safe to say, like, this doesn't make sense to me, or I'm confused about why we're making this decision. Mm-hmm. This makes me uncomfortable. Like, why are we doing this? Mm-hmm. And feeling comfortable to ask those questions so that you can move forward.
I'm laughing, guys, because there has been a lot of those conversations, but fast forward 2-3 years later, Emily has 200 plus thousand in her retirement, which she just started almost 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. She has about 300 to 400,000 of equity in this home, which again, we started about 2-3 years ago. Yes, arguably her student loans, we didn't focus on that as much, but I feel like we could do better. And guess what? We did. And so we're sitting on a very good situation. And I'm not special. This is why I'm so passionate about this stuff. I want to help people do the same thing. It's not hard. It's just consistency. It's diligence. It's education. And it's peeling the curtain back. Mm-hmm. Suits and Scrubs, we believe quality information is entitled to everyone. We do. So those are the six things that I recommend for someone gets married.
So we've talked about the student loans, the investments that you've made, and the challenges that we've encountered for sure. We've encountered quite a bit of those. Mm-hmm. Are there any additional tidbits, any additional advice that you would give prior to taking that plunge, saying I do, anything, any last words that you would give our audience, our viewers?
Yeah, I think everyone's risk appetite is different. And I think that don't make decisions unless you have all the information and you're comfortable. I do think that my risk appetite is probably higher than most. And I believe that you have to think differently. And what that means for me was being in Charlotte, North Carolina, which is one of the fastest growing cities, and the job market is booming. I knew real estate was going to be something that was hot, and it is. It still is. And I started with mutual funds. I like mutual funds. Those are investments that you can have in your 401k, as well as your brokerage accounts, your private accounts, however you want to invest. Mutual funds to me were just too expensive. There's expense ratio as it relates to mutual funds. I do index and ETFs, which is exchange traded funds, which I talked about previously. And you can Google the top six ETFs and index funds. Most people don't realize that. Most people are paying financial advisors astronomical fees. And maybe they can do better than me. Maybe they can. But I realize 7 to 10%. And there's so much information out there. If you're a big fan of YouTube, which is where our stuff is posted, you can watch the top places to invest. And I believe that your age should really influence the way that you are investing. I believe that a lot of folks below 40 should be in stocks. And as you get older, you should probably do a mix. And then as you get older, like the 60, 70, 80 mark, you should probably do bonds. You know, because at the end of the day, like, you know, your time is not on your side. And you should really look at dividends and that sort of thing. So those are just some tidbits as it relates to investments and stocks. And I do think everyone should have control of their financial destiny. You shouldn't just leave everything to a financial advisor, just like you wouldn't leave everything to a doctor. It's asking the right questions. I want to equip you to ask the right questions. It's a challenge. Talk to your financial advisor. We'll do a whole other podcast episode on this. What are your fees? What are your fees on the investments that you're doing? I've seen some of the financial advisors that will buy and sell. And at the end of the day, they got the 7%, which was nice. But if you saw all the fees associated with that, it was a lot.
You've got to pay attention to the fine print.
Got to pay attention. You can't trust blindly. Like, you know, taxes is another big thing, which we didn't talk about this episode. Mm-hmm. But I do believe understanding your tax benefits is important to drive your financial independence. And so I have a free book on our website, SusanScrubsPodcast.com, and it teaches you very specifically steps, what to do in what order. But not only just the investment side, but also how do you get there? Mm-hmm. I don't think you should invest a single dollar until you invest into skill sets that drives your high income. And if you're not driven by high income, then yes, time is on your side. Put $100 a week into your retirement investment account. So yeah, that would be my advice as people are walking through their financial journey. So transparency, communications, and then a little bonus that we talked about at the end is making sure people have an ongoing strategy meeting with your spouse. I think it's so important. It doesn't have to be boring, y'all. I recommend, you know, taking a weekend and renting a hotel. Let the kids have it. Let the kids go at home, and you have a vision board. You know, what do you want your family to be in 2024 or 2025? What is your finance? Finances can be a piece of this. What is your finances? You know, I guarantee you it builds a certain level of intimacy and trust. Because what if you are the financial decision maker in your relationship? You know, what if the other person is the health shepherd of their relationship? Y'all come together and what the visions and values of your family, and you do it every single year. Like, I'm a strategic planning manager. I've done that my entire career. Why not do that in your own life? So the bonus I would say for people is to do that and invite that conversation.
And I think that's great. You might have one person who might bring more financially to the relationship, or you might both bring an equal amount to the relationship financially, but having that discussion and making sure that both people have a say in what the financial future looks like, I think is huge. It really does impact, like you said, your intimacy, your trust in one another, and it makes sure that you're aligned on your goals, your future goals. That's right. That's huge.
That's right. And then, you know, I think if you sit down and you walk through your net worth every single year and where you are, and let's say one person does it, but then you bring your spouse along the ride, it's a powerful thing. Mm-hmm. It allows you to understand where you're going and how much money you want to be successful. And I think health and wealth are one of those two areas that you have to take control of. You can't let someone else be the destiny or in the driver's seat. You know this from a doctor standpoint. You know that. Like, you have, yes, they're supposed to enable you to be successful. Doctors are. Financial advisors are supposed to enable you to be successful. But you need to know.
You have to take ownership.
100% ownership. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Well, we can talk about our next episode a little bit, give our viewers, so to speak, an idea of what's coming next. So our next health episode is going to be talking more about how to detoxify your life. So ridding your life of all of these environmental toxins. And I'll be happy to talk about that more during our next
episode. Is that gut microbiome?
A little. I mean, it's everything. I love talking about the gut microbiome. Mm-hmm. So everything is kind of interconnected to the microbiome. But it impacts the microbiome, but it impacts hormones and a lot of other things too. So
yeah,
we'll talk about that next time.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, we talked about a little bit of health,
a little bit of wealth,
and a lot of love. Until next time, take care of you guys.
Bye, guys.
He's on the hustle, she's on the grind. There's no time to kill. Saving lives and new deadlines, and there's some holes to fill. With a little health and a little wealth and a lot of love, that's a life that we live. Suits and Scrubs.
We hope Suits and Scrubs information serves as a valuable resource for your financial journey and inspires you to make informed decisions. However, it is essential to exercise caution, seek expert guidance when needed, and take responsibility for your financial choices. Remember that financial success and independence requires careful consideration, planning, and ongoing assessment. Your financial journey is unique to you, and we wish you the best at your work towards achieving financial goals and realizing your vision of a prosperous future.